Hello, you're listening to Sonic Podcast Adventure, the world's most way past cool Sonic podcast. My name is Sean Aitchin, and I'm joined as always by...
I am Chris Dobbins, and we are joined by a special guest today, if you want to introduce yourself again.
Say it's Daniel Barnes here. What's up?
Yo.
How's it going? Very quick question. You said third time on the podcast. I'm like, wait, is it third? My brain was remembering only one before. It was Sat AM.
And yeah,
we did the Archie comic too, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah, you were on when you were talking about Ian Flynn's run. Okay, yeah. It's been a while, I think.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years, I think.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. You've joined the third time club. We're here to talk about Scrapnik Island, a fantastic miniseries you wrote for IDW.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. No. Let's get right into it.
Let's dive in.
I mean, we already know your history with Sonic, so I guess tell us your history with working with IDW. Like, how did this start? How did you go from, you know, just being a fan, then writing the for one of the specials, and then writing the whole series?
Oh, man. Jeez. Let me recall the timeline. So it was, was it 2021? Was it 2022? So, like, yeah, I basically... I got, you guys remember that hypothetical cartoon pitch I put out for like a Sonic cartoon like 2 years ago?
Yes,
on Twitter?
Yes.
So I decided to post that. That was like, that had to have been 2021, I think. So I posted that and it got pretty decent traction, and it attracted my current literary agent to me, and she saw it and she reached out. She's like, I'm going to ask this guy if he needs an agent. And so she picked me up. And I'm like at Inkwell Management now. And she's trying to find work for me. And I'm like, hey, do you guys know anyone at IDW? Because I would really like to work on Sonic. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. And then she pushed some buttons and turned some knobs. And then like a week later, they're like, hey, Daniel, we're making our annual. Would you like to pitch for our annual? And it was David and Riley who approached me with that. David, oh, goodness. I don't want to mispronounce his last name. It's Marriott or Marriott. I'm sorry, David, if you're listening to this, if I say your name the wrong way. And Riley Farmer. And they approached me. And I think they were already following me on Twitter because I'm the guy who just runs his mouth about Sonic all the time on Twitter. So they were already following me. And so, yeah, I had a literary agent, and I'm the guy who talks about Sonic a lot. So they were just like, hey, yeah, and they invited me. And that's when I got to write my my first thing with IDW, which was the six-page story Weapons in the 2022, I think, annual with Jim Merle and Omega fighting each other. And I had, like, written that, and, like, I think right when I got done writing it, like, it hadn't even been, like, drawn yet. They're like, hey, also, Danny, it turns out we have a gap in our scheduling because we were going to have a mini series at the end of 2022 that was going to tie up some plot ends from the main series, but they accidentally kind of got resolved already. So we just have a wide open slate for four issue miniseries. We'd like to pitch something. And so I pitched several things.
Oh, hell yeah.
And one of them was Scrapnik Island. And they ran with it, and Sega really liked it a lot. And I just kind of just slid right in there, and I got to write a four-issue miniseries.
That is such a great opportunity that they were like, well, you know, we had everything's resolved, so here you go.
Yeah, it was just like we did something just wide open. Like, we don't have any plot points it needs to be tied to. We're just a four-issue story.
Was there any rush because of that, or was it pretty far in advance?
It wasn't particularly rushed. In fact, I think in my pitch I said, hey, can we like do it like in October, since it can be so it could be a Halloween type thing? And they're like, oh yeah. So we had like plenty of time.
Oh, that's so cool.
It probably would have come out even sooner if I hadn't been like, hey, can we do it like a, because I think they wanted it to be in the fall, so it might have been like September-ish, but I was like, let's do it in October for Halloween marketing. So
Awesome. What if you don't mind sharing, what were some of the other pitches you gave?
I don't want to say what those are in case they become something later.
Totally fair. Well, then what was your original pitch for Scrapnik Island? Like, was it pretty much the same, or did it change a little bit along the way?
It was pretty much the same all the way through. It was, the Death Egg has crashed somewhere and has made an island, and Sonic and Tails find the island, and there's a bunch of old robots, and they run into repurposed versions of Mecha Sonic and Mecha Knuckles. They have at it. It was a very broad pitch. And it was actually pretty funny. In my original pitch, I renamed them. I think it was Rustic the Junk Hog and Brass the Junk Kidna. And it was and it was very much like, because I didn't know if they wanted me to use the original robot names. I didn't know if they were going to be cool with that. So I'm like, oh, they're like new characters made out of old robots. And Sega was like, no, is this Mecha Sonic from Sonic 3? Can you please call him Mecha Sonic? I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted. So yes, please say no more.
Oh, that's, wow. Yeah. I did not realize they were like that cool about it. Because we one of the questions or a variant of the question was like, was there like an approval process or hurdles for like putting all of these like Easter eggs and older characters into it? But it seems like they were like pretty cool with it all.
Sega is very cool. They were like wide open. They were like, yeah, no, they loved it.
Yeah, I was interested because like with Mecha Sonic and the Death Egg, it was curious that you had like two major classic Sonic things tied into a modern Sonic story. I didn't know if Sega was still trying to like keep those ideas separate.
There's finesse to it. There's a dance. So like, there were several qualifying factors that I think made it okay for it to happen. It was a one-shot story that was self-contained on an island that was separated from the rest of the world.
I see.
And also, it makes it very clear that they're old and broken down, and these aren't current Eggman robots. So it doesn't confuse the story or the branding or anything like that. So
it's very
clear this is an old robot on an island, and it's not messing with anything outside of itself. So that made them cool with it.
That's interesting. Yeah, huh. I will ask though. Was there an approval process for the Knuckles OVA hat to bring that in?
because Nelly Fordrain is the one who like designed the primary three Scrapniks, Mecha Knuckles and Sigma, and so we were like, let's give him the hat and put it on him, and they didn't say anything, so clearly they were cool with it. So
good.
Hell yeah.
I like how Mecha Knuckles and Mecha Sonic in this have like a little touch of fashion, like Mecha Sonic with his cape and Mecha Knuckles with his hat. They got a little flair on them.
It makes them distinct, right? It makes them like different characters that aren't just the original version.
Yeah,
I've talked about this before on Twitter, but you gotta have like robots with like cloaks on is like the coolest aesthetic ever. You gotta like get it.
Yes,
that, right?
Yes, 100%.
It's so cool.
But I also love that these robots. I love that these robots care enough to like. Oh, I gotta make it fashion a little bit.
Well, yeah. They've developed a sense of human shame.
The story is all about like we're trying to become different people. We're trying to become different self. So it's like, oh, I have a hat on. I'm different now. That's how you exemplify. Like, no, I'm Knuckles with a hat on. I'm not the same Knuckles.
I also like too that it does imply like, oh, they're protecting themselves from the elements that are already rusting them away.
Maybe so.
I was also going to ask, like, what was the general like inspiration for this pitch and this series? Like, what did you specifically want to explore? Like the fallout of a previous Sonic thing and like bring it back into the light, or was it just you wanted to explore like old robots? What was specifically the inspiration?
Well, it was just generally the idea of Eggman built all of these robots, and like a lot of them, some of them you don't see anymore. And it's just like, what happens to just a general idea is Eggman's always putting this really big footprint on the world with all of the technology and the stuff he builds. And it's like, what happens to a lot of that stuff that's just not around anymore? Because he's a guy who's always kind of like forward thinking. He's always making new stuff. He's forgetting about the old stuff he did like instantly. So what happens to all that stuff he forgets? It has to go somewhere. And I started thinking about like a, you know, trash islands, which are like a real thing. It was gathered trash in the middle of the ocean that form up like land masses. And I'm like, oh, that'd be cool if there was like a trash island of a bunch of like Eggman technology. And I'm like, oh, he's had multiple death eggs. What if we had like an island that was a death egg with a bunch of trash on it? And then it just started to slowly snowball from there. And then I started thinking about that. Yeah. Like I am. And I'm always of the mind that like the best Sonic at his best is like when you have him go to an island and it's like a new island he hasn't been to, and he explores the island, and then he moves on to the next island. And I think that's like the ideal like structure for cool Sonic stories, which Sonic Frontiers just did that. So the original Sonic 1, 2, and 3 were like that. So I think that's like that's kind of my guiding principle. It's like, oh, make a new island, put a bunch of cool stuff on there, have it be a theme, and then like he leaves the island and goes to another island, you know? So
no, so Sonic is Luffy.
I know, very much. It's One Piece. I think One Piece very much is like the ideal model for how you should be doing Sonic stories.
Yeah, it lets you like shake things up every time you have a new arc, and it makes it so like, yeah, there's existing lore elements, but you don't have to feel like weighed down by them. You can create something wholly new every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Something I've noticed
reinforces he's an explorer too.
Yes.
Something I've noticed in like both your weapons story and this one is both of your stories so far have focused on like the robots. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what attracts you to telling the story about these robots, and specifically when it comes to Sonic?
I mean, I just, even outside of Sonic, I just like robots a lot. I'm a big Transformers fan. I like mecha anime and stuff like that. So I think robots are cool. I love Metabots also. There's something inherently, I just like robots, and then there's just something always instantly compelling about the classic, existential, you can talk about the human condition of purpose and function and growth and understanding the human condition by looking at it through the lens of robots. So I've always just thought that's like generally pretty interesting. So.
Gotcha. That's nice. I like that.
I was going to say too, going back to the Luffy inspiration. I think Chris and I both, and I think you as well, tend to think of Sonic as a shonen protagonist. He's like a reactive hero. He wants to go explore and then will help everyone he sees on his way. And was there a specific like thought process to, you know, taking that and then going with like his immediate response when he's captured is less help out and more like fear? Did you want to like twist that on its head a little bit?
Well, it was just I know he got there, and there's a lot of different factors at play. Like I think it's very much like, I know a lot of people when we're saying like it looked like he was like super like scared when he got there, but it's much more, I think maybe the art kind of like makes it seem like he's more scared than he is. It's much more like he's on edge. He's kind of like, he's in an uncomfortable situation. His foot is busted. He doesn't know where Tails is. He's in a dark place with a bunch of robots that look hideous because they're like not the robots he recognizes. They're like really creepy, twisted up, messed up versions of them. And he's just completely in unfamiliar territory. So he's kind of like you get a rare look of Sonic kind of on his back foot, and he's unsure of what's going on. But like most Sonic stories, once he understands what's going on, he knows exactly what he has to do. So
yeah, I really like that it starts out a little bit slow like that versus like, oh, new place, excitement, let's go explore, let's go kick robots. It's like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? Has to catch his bearings a little bit.
It's very much, it's a theme of not judging a book by its cover. Everything doesn't seem like what it is on the surface. There's something more inside. You go to the island, it looks scary. It actually isn't that scary. Everyone's pretty nice. But like within Mecha Sonic, he seems pretty nice, but there's actually something going on beneath the surface that you don't know about. And it's just about like going a little deeper below the surface, right?
Yeah. God, this is a great series.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What made you want to make this story into sort of like a spooky psychological horror? Like, what was the inspiration behind doing specifically that kind of mood for this story?
I just think it's something you don't really see in Sonic really at all, for the most part. Like, even with the Metal Virus, which had just happened more recently back then, but like was, and that's basically a kind of a send up to Zombie Fiction. Even that was a lot less like actually creepy and more just kind of like more like taxing the relationships and the psyche of the characters. And it's just like you don't really see a lot of straight laced horror in Sonic. And so I was like, oh, let's do something that's like, and I think that's what the miniseries should be used for, is like, let's do weird stuff that you don't normally see in Sonic in the one off miniseries.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, let's lean into that. Let's do a kind of a, you know, Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, but for Sonic, you know.
that really is what this
place
is.
To start. Yeah. Boy, this is, there's so much going into this that is just completely like both of our shit. Like, I'll say too, like, what was the like design process working with the artists to make this?
So, like I said earlier, Natalie made the primary through Scrapniks, and they got sent into Sega. She made comprehensive turnarounds, which we posted simplified turnarounds of those on social media months ago. But I think if they got approved, don't hold me exactly to this, but in the trade paperback, you'll get much more comprehensive turnarounds with notes and details on them.
Hell
and stuff,
yeah.
Which would be really cool. Ooh. for at least Mecha, Sonic, and Knuckles, and Sigma. But the rest of the little critters running around, it was funny. It was actually super fun. So all of us IDW Sonic creators have a Discord that we all chill on, and we hang out, and we talk, and we play video games and stuff. But we also like use it as a collaborative tool. And so we were just like, hey, guys, we have an island of rusted, mixed-up badniks from the past. All their parts are mixed up. Make some stuff up that you want, and we'll just put it in the comic. So just all the different little Scrapnik critters are just like inventions, and like their creations by all the different artists on IDW. Sonic making their little thing. We had a little Scrapnik jam at one point.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with specifically Thomas Roethlisberger's Nevin. I love that little freak.
Nevin's great.
I'll bring up something, Sean.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Daniel, you made Sonic cuss.
Oh, he said crap? Do people really
think
crap?
He said crap, and he said sucks.
Do people think crap is a curse word?
Well, let me put it this way. If I said those when I was like, you're between 8 and 11, my parents would say, don't say that.
I would have had my tongue scrubbed with soap.
Man, yeah. I remember people were like, yeah, reacting like, oh, Sonic said crap. And it's like, crap isn't a curse word. Silver has said crap in the IDW comics before.
Well, here's the thing. And on the Sonic wiki on Sonic News Network for the fourth issue of this, it says Sonic's line to Metal Sonic to Mecha Sonic to cut the crap is one of the few instances where Sonic himself swears. So the wiki officially defines it as a swear. How dare you?
I'm aware of Sonic News Network.
I'm familiar with the works of Sonic News Network.
I want to say that like crap doesn't feel like it's a swear unless it's like a Scottish accent or something. some stink on it.
have you seen Sonic X in Japanese? He's a shit in Sonic
yes.
X.
Yeah, I want to say Japanese like sub like the original Japanese language of things isn't quite as like. Like it, I feel like the cursing doesn't get rated as hard. But also, it just reminds me of when I used to get like when I got into Homestar Runner as a kid, like, and I started saying crap. It was like, It was a third eye opening moment, and also a parents yelling at me moment. So
that's
so
Sonic I'll call should it feel. They should feel like a teenager. Oh man! Oh my parents! Oh, he's so cool.
You know? Sonic's parents do not approve.
Sonic should legally be allowed to say hell yeah. That's what I've been sticking at.
This turns into a 4-hour podcast like, about Sonic's ability to curse.
He should be able to talk like Bart Simpson.
Yeah, no, you're right. He is a little stinker.
He's a little stinker.
I was going to say, do you, like, if, was there any, like, Scrapniks that you felt like that you wanted to add or get to that just by time or anything you weren't able to get to?
No. I pretty much was able to accomplish everything I wanted to in this miniseries. So,
damn.
Yeah, that's awesome. It is such a like tight series too. Like, do you want to like talk about the writing process of like getting it all to like you know obviously fit into a miniseries and all that?
Yeah, it's just the my normal process is that I do an outline. Which is what we did for this. We just did issue 1, issue 2, issue 3, issue 4, and I wrote a few paragraphs on each issue on what happens and how, like, what it's about and how it ends. And just to get the general, like, it's like written in prose, almost like a small, like, short novel or like Wikipedia synopsis type thing. And that's the thing that got primarily, like, had to get approved. So, like, I sent that to the editors and they sent that to Sega to make sure they were cool with it. And they gave their like little notes on little things, which they were very sparse on notes just in general for the whole story. Like I don't know, like if Sonic fans have convinced themselves that like Sega are these like sticklers that always like crush like fun and good ideas, but they were like wide open on this book. Like I had no problem working with them at all.
I had a bit of that idea, like not, I didn't think they were like, you know, stamping down all ideas, but like I had, you know, like any big company with IP, you would think that they were a little bit like precious with it. But like, this is so cool hearing how open they are to be like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you didn't have a problem with the dreaded mandates.
Yeah.
Yeah. God.
The mandates.
The mandates.
Don't get me started on like.
I was just going to ask, was there any like specific themes you wanted to cover, especially in, you know, you talked about a little bit with like why you like robots and stuff, but anything specific?
Just generally like the themes come from organically from the premise and the location and the characters. Like if I'm going to go to a trash island and talk about trash, then you start to key in on, okay, trash, we're talking about trash, so... You throw stuff out that's like, doesn't have value anymore. That's useless. What does that mean? What does it mean to have value? These robots are like, they're kind of like people. So like you start to like just really key into that. And, I've mentioned this before on Twitter, I think, but like, I'm a huge, like one of my favorite movies of all time is The Brave Little Toaster, which talks about that. I love the Toy Story trilogy, which talks about that. So that's really good. Works of kids fiction that talk about existential like purpose in life and value and all of that stuff. So just really keying in on once you start talking about trash and like you're gonna be like, oh, Mecha Sonic is there, but Mecha Sonic isn't around anymore. Metal Sonic's the primary Sonic robot. Does Mecha Sonic feel some kind of way about that? Maybe, or you know, you start it just organically you start getting these themes and ideas from just the situation and the characters, right?
Yeah, I really love that struggle, the internal struggle that he has. And the way it's visualized, too, is really nice, where he starts to see Mecha Knuckles as Sonic and just like that deep programming of like, I need to best this or I will be trash.
Yeah, the robot PTSD.
Yeah, we programmed it into them.
Like, I love the really creepy... Eggman in the shadows in his mind. That's really well done.
Yeah, no, that was
So like on the topic of the art, I wanted to ask, did you have a choice in getting it was Jack who was the illustrator, right?
Yeah, Jack Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, did you have a choice in getting Jack to do the art and Natalie to do the colors? Like, did you have any input on that, or was it mainly IDW?
Well, they just chose Jack. Like, Jack was wanting to do Sonic work, and they're like, Jack will be great for this because Jack is really good with robots because Jack works on Transformers.
Okay.
So he's really good at robots and details. So it was a great pick. I didn't choose him, but it was like the perfect pick.
And
Natalie specifically, I remember because Natalie and I had already been talking before I was working on IDW from other past Sonic things. We were just in DMs talking. And I had told her about my scrapbook idea, and she just really latched onto it and liked it a lot. And without me even like prompting her, she just started like doing rough artwork and like ideas for the characters, and really fell in love with the character and did art for my pitch to help it like get through.
She was
like, "Yo, no, if you need this, I'm going to do some art, and then you can like attach that to your pitch." She was really excited, and so
that rocks.
I was very much like, if you can have Nat do the colors, because she really likes the story. She's a great colorist. I mean, that would be great. She gets it already. And so I pushed for her to, and she already worked on the comic, obviously. So
yes, these four issues look like nothing else in the IDW run. Like, you three together are such a powerhouse of a team.
Yeah. I was skimming for some notes and stuff, and I found myself like, no, I don't want to like go quick through this. I want to look at every page. It's such a beautiful series.
Yeah
they match made in heaven. They were just peanut butter and chocolate, you know. very lucky I got like an amazing art team to help all my stuff like look really good, you know.
I also want to point out the climax in issue 4 is sure. Another Sonic OVA reference. I'm very like shocked that Sega is okay with like so many OVA references and a lot of things, because like they even reference this in the OKKO crossover, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine to like, if you have narrative points that work in the story, then if they happen to be references, that's not a big deal. It's when you have like Sonic look at the camera and say, "This reminds me of the time I was in the OVA from 1996. So like,
Holy crap, Lois.
Holy crap, Lois.
Ah, Peter!
Like, you know, that's not you're doing stuff in service of the here and now and a good story. So if the story aligns with referencing old things to tell that current story, then that's fine. It's just, you don't want him like looking at the camera and inorganically like referencing past products and adventures out of place.
Boy, my good friend Sally Acorn would sure love this adventure on Scrappy.
Whoa, man. This reminds me of the time I got turned into a robot myself and fought on robot Knuckles. It was like, wait, what is this?
Sonic gets tackled by three people in suits.
I love the inversion that you do on that, where in the OVA, Metal like lets himself die, saying there is only one Sonic, and then your version is Sonic saying no, like you give yourself purpose and nobody else. I love that little inversion. It's so good.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's another thing. Well, thank you. And also, it's like that's another thing. If I'm going to like reference something or bring something up again, like, there needs to be like a new purpose for it. I don't like referencing stuff just for the sake of it. It's like, if it's mirroring the OVA, it's because I'm purposely trying to say something or invert what happens in the OVA on purpose, not just the exact same thing happening again. Don't you remember when this happened before? Like, you just have to be very judicious with how you do that.
The whole miniseries feels like that, where it's like, we are literally digging up things from the past and they have all collected in one place as, you know, junk, but they're all serving new purpose, literally and figuratively. And it's just like, it all comes together so goddamn perfectly.
Yeah, man. Like, it's just like, that's the whole thing. Like, Sonic, the Sonic series and like Sonic himself are just about, it's about moving forward. It's about being in the present. And it's like, all of his adventures should be new stuff happening to him. You shouldn't be worrying about referencing a lot of stuff. Like, you should be using past adventures and stuff as a guidepost to help you make new stuff. And so you should be very sparse about referencing old stuff. But if you are going to bring up old stuff, there needs to be a new reason for it. There needs to be a new spin on it, right? So
yeah, I feel like too.
That's why everyone hates Green Hill Zone showing up so much in like the new games. It's like, this is just Green Hill Zone again, and you haven't done anything new with it. It's just like diminishing returns. Green Hill Zone,
Green
like,
Hill, and Chemical Plant.
Yeah, it's just like what's new here? Like if you did Green Hill Zone, but like it gets blown up or bombed, like Sonic 3 when you're on Angel Island. Like if you did something like that, then it's like, oh, it's like Green Hill Zone on fire. That's a new.
What? I don't know idea. About you, but Green Hill's looking a lot more like Sand Hill right now.
Oh, brother. Oh, brother. This guy stinks.
I really like the idea of Sonic being like, I like how you incorporated Sonic being that like positive flat character arc where he's not necessarily one to change, but he's one to change the world around him. And like these robots were already kind of making their way into changing themselves, improving themselves, and then finding their own path. But like you still give him that little bit of moment of like of helping Mechasonic. Wait, Mechasonic? I was getting confused. Yeah, okay, Mechasonic. Yeah, of helping him find his way and be like, I can be more than this. And again, it's always great when it's the opponent that was kind of drawing him back into that mindset helps him move away from it.
Yeah, I mean, that is another key. Like, I think that's the key to Sonic stories. And it's also what One Piece kind of does. It's just like Sonic is a static character. Sonic is kind of a complete character. He does not need to change. The way he does things is he is... not perfect, but he's kind of like, he, just by being himself, he makes everything better, even if he's not trying to or is aware of it. And so, our best Sonic stories are, when the world around him has a problem or the people around him have a problem and he just kind of shows up and just by being himself, he kind of like changes things for the better. He's a natural force of positivity. We've seen stuff like that in Sonic and the Black Knight, where he's just like, you know, he shows up and he just he's himself, and then he changes a character's mind by being himself. We've seen it with Sonic Adventure 2 when he does it to Shadow. That's just how it is, man.
Yeah, I
he's
love
a good
that.
Boy.
Yeah, I love that. Like a lot of the people at IDW understand that about him. That like he is. Like he's getting more of that shonen treatment in the comics lately, that is just like the absolute right direction.
I also want to commend you and thank you for the way Tails is handled in this. Like this isn't a word that you usually apply for Tails, but he's so much more badass in this. Like he makes his fucking gun that's like the Sega Menacer. He. Like, I love it. He's just, he's so good in this. I love him. I love what you do with my boy.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, no, Tails is cool. So
I want to ask, because when you were on, when you were talking about Ian's comic run on Archie, you talked about how he loves tying Sonic's hands behind his back. And I want to know if that was inspiration or served anything towards giving Sonic the foot brace.
I don't know if that was directly inspiration, but just a general like Sonic is by default kind of an overpowered character.
Yeah.
And and so if you're trying to sell a horror story, Sonic just not having any kind of handicap is going to like deflate all of the horror from the story, because he can just run around at top speed and fix the problem really quickly. So it's like, okay, if we need suspense, if we need horror, how do I prevent Sonic from ruining that by being himself? It's like, oh yeah, he breaks his leg or something like that, and that immediately makes it tough. It's very much the trope of, also, it's a horror movie, and you know, in the horror movies, when you try to get in the car to get away, the car doesn't start. So it's kind of like that. He has a car boot on the whole time. He can't get away.
I like that, and also like it sort of happened around the same time in the main IDW run where he injured his leg in the fight against Surge in Imperial City.
Yeah, that was completely by accident, but we were talking at the same time about it, and we're like, oh shit, you're doing it also? And so I kind of have Tails offhandedly mentioned that, I think in issue 2 of Scrapnik Island.
Oh!
Yeah, he's kind of like, he's like, your foot's been taking a lot of punishment lately. He just kind of like
says
that. And he's referring to that happening in the main comic.
Wow.
There's a doctor that says, Sonic, do you know what a stress fracture is? but yeah, there's so much. It's so fascinating to hear like how like crafted this is. You're a great writer. I don't know how to compliment something when we're talking about it like in this context without it just being like, this is great. Like, but it's fantastic.
It's good because I like it and it made me feel good.
Yeah. Cut the whole podcast. Just do that.
I like it.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to like specifically talk about in the process or any like collaboration you want to talk about?
There was one thing I know, like, okay, so I'll bring this up. So at the very end, there's a part where like Mecha Sonic is crying through Sonic.
I was going to mention that.
And I don't know, for some reason, I don't know why, Sonic fans have a big preoccupation with wanting to see Sonic cry for some reason. And I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know where this is coming from. I saw so many people go, whoa, Daniel got around the mandates and got Sonic to cry. It's like, I really wasn't trying to get around anything. It just, I wanted Mecha to cry, and it made sense to do it through Sonic because there's a mind. Like, people were like, oh, Sega keeps Sonic from crying. And it's like, well, yeah, because Sonic doesn't cry. That's not in character. Sonic's not supposed to cry. That's literally his character. So I don't know why people think it's this weird, like, Sega's keeping the writers from having Sonic cries. Like, that's not in character. It's the reason why, like, Tails also isn't cursing and punching people. It's not in character for Tails to do that. It's just, I don't know. Like, Sonic generally, it's out of character for him to cry about stuff. So, it's not I wasn't trying to trick Sega into getting him to cry somehow. Like Sega didn't look at the entire comic and I snuck it by them. Like, it was in character for the moment. So
I'm imagining
just want to directly
one, like,
talk about that.
What's that one Tom and Jerry gif where he's like, like
they're sneaking behind the doorway laughing evilly.
Yeah, you're pulling the wool over their eyes. You're sneaking it by. What other little things did you hide throughout this that nobody's noticed?
Sega reads every single comic before they come out. It's like, you don't sneak stuff by them. Like, that's the whole point.
Love the idea of like mysterious men in suits just coming to tackle Sonic. But Chris, you were asking, like, specifically, I'm going to take one of the questions you wrote here. Any hidden Easter eggs that that nobody's noticed yet that you put in there?
Hidden Easter eggs that no one's noticed.
Like, I know the big one that everybody noticed is Mecha Sonic yelling, I'll crush you. Like, when that happened, people were like, oh, shit, he referenced it.
Yeah, like, I was surprised at how much, like, it got trending, I think, on Twitter when it happened. So yeah, it's a Super Mario Brothers Z thing. I mean, I don't think there's anything in particular I put in there that people didn't just immediately notice. He has the Sega Minisir. I think I saw someone notice it, but like one of the, you know, the Scrambled Squad, the three egg robos that help one of them has the Sonic's hat on from the OVA.
I saw that. I also love that their name is the Scrambled Squad. That's very cute.
That's like their little unofficial name, I guess.
I love the name of the ruins of the egg carrier being the Scrambled Egg Carrier. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. It's all scrambled. They're all junk. They're all mixed up.
I have a question not specifically related to Scrapnik. What's if you got to write a miniseries for any character or like team of characters, who's your dream scenario?
Oh man, I mean, Knuckles and Metal Sonic are my favorite characters, so I would love to do something with them. I think a Dr. Eggman miniseries would be really cool, or just stars Eggman.
I would love to see your take on Eggman.
You'll see a little bit of it in Sonic's 900th Adventure coming out. I got to write Dr. Eggman for the first time. So.
Hell yeah, and you got a big new robot showing up.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Is there anything else you want to share about Scrapnik Island?
I don't know. I think that pretty much covers everything. It was a blast to work on. Very proud of it. Sega was really cool to work with. My team was awesome. Very fortunate. I hope I get to write more miniseries in the future.
I hope you do too. I hope we see the return of the Scrapniks because, well, like, they're all very good, but also Sigma himself is a very good boy, and I want to see more of him.
Yeah. Maybe someday. Who knows?
I just hope Omega doesn't find the island.
Oh no, oh god, oh no.
exactly. Like it feels like it's perfectly set up, but I want it to happen, but I also don't want it to happen.
This thing is just like, oh, hello fellow friend, and then just annihilation.
Oh man, but Mechasonic versus Omega would be awesome though.
Yeah.
It'd be a really cool fight.
Personally, Omega has never been one of my favorite characters in the series, but after Weapons, I want to see more of your take on Omega.
Yeah, Omega's pretty fun. He's a big death machine, so that's always fun. I would love to pair him with Jamurl some more. I think like a buddy cop Jamurl and Omega adventure would be really fun, actually.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, it's I would love to see Omega and Cream, because Cream is used to the more like kind robot of Jemeril. So just to be like big kill machine and cute little girl
would be fun.
I think that about does it. Unless Chris, do you have any more questions?
My last question is, other than we know that you're doing a story for Sonic 900. What's next for you, or what's coming up that you can talk about?
I don't, like in Sonic, I'm not sure currently.
Well, also in general,
as I told you guys, I work at ArenaNet. I work on a game called Guild Wars 2, and, it's a MMO that's been around for over 10 years, and we have a new expansion, pack coming out. And I think, by the time people are hearing this episode, it'll be out. So, it's called Secrets of the Obscure. And I wrote like half of a map on it. So that'll be really cool.
Dang.
That'll be awesome. Fun. That's my next major project, along with just Scrapnik Island coming out physically as a trade paperback.
What's the process like writing on a game like that?
Oh, it's pretty fun. It's interesting. You work with game designers. There are different events, there are different instances, and you write scripts for them, and you take them to something we call office hours. And it's kind of like basically it works much more like a writer's room, which is really fun. So it's a bunch of different writers who are on the narrative team, and we bring our scripts in, and everyone table reads them and gives feedback, and add all the changes, and then we plug them into the game and we talk with the game designers about what works, what doesn't. It's very collaborative. It's pretty fun, though.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you for talking to us about Scrapnik Island, which, again, I cannot repeat enough, is fantastically crafted and written and drawn and everything. Beautiful series.
I agree. Thank you.
I know I've seen a lot of like talk online that this is like some of, if not the best IDW has put out for Sonic. So huge congrats there. And I'm eager to see what you're coming up with next, whether it's Sonic or your own original stuff.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. Now, if you would like to join us for some drop and rings, I have found some lovely Knuckles products to share with you.
Sure.
All right. So this first one, I don't know what the fuck it is. It just says Sega Project Sonic the Hedgehog Knuckles action figure light new battery. And I believe the light is referring to whatever ET bullshit is going on here.
What the heck?
I don't know what this is.
Like, glow. It looks like he was meant to hold something because there's the hole in his hand. So it looks like he was maybe meant to hold something, and that like the glow would be part of whatever he was holding.
Yeah. Well, do you like scouters? Knuckles got two of them.
Double scouter.
Now, how much do you think this rare, beautiful artifact is worth?
Like $35? I don't know.
35? Okay.
So like 20?
20? Oh, you're both under. It is $41.49.
Where at? What is this, on eBay? What is this?
Yeah, this is on eBay. Here, get yourself a gift.
Does it say what company made this?
I have no fucking clue. It is the weirdest thing I have found so far. Oh, you know what? I lied. I found the weirdest thing. This is clearly a Knuckles head on a Super Shadow body.
Oh,
God.
And he said, look at those fingers.
Yeah. Sega Sonic the Hedgehog action figure 4-inch pre-owned. You know, an official pre-owned figure. It's like the scale is just slightly off. So it's really disturbing.
His shoes are completely the wrong color.
How much do we think for this lovely Knuckles collector's item?
I'll say 50.
50? Okay.
I'm going to say a nice 25.
Okay, it is 1920, but it went down from $79.99.
80 bucks? Are you kidding?
It just cost more than a first four figures statue for some reason.
Yeah. Now, Danny, how much would you like for a Knuckles to give you a nice thumbs up whenever you look at him?
Oh.
Now, let me show you this other picture to show truly how skinny his body and arms are. He's got like a weird football body. And then his legs are just like noodles.
I like the noodles, though.
Well, hold on. I have to read this full name. Sonic Adventure Knuckles the Echidna figure. Sega Resaurus 1999. Rare! Exclamation. Oop. OOP. Oop.
Out of
print. I was going to say, this almost looks like an official one for Sonic Adventure.
But, I think it is.
It looks like the version of like that I had of Sonic, except it doesn't have like that stand, that silver stand I had for Sonic had a button on it that lets like that makes Sonic talk.
I'd say if they're calling it rare and they're saying it's an official Sonic Adventure collector's item, I'd say they're charging at least like $100 for it.
Okay, Chris.
I'm gonna say 75.
It is 30. It could be yours for an easy payment of $30.
You're really underselling how rare it is.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, this guy's cheaper than the bootleg.
It's $19.99 rare. $30,
rare. So the last one I have is because we talked about Scrap Nicks. I did find one nice little Bad Nick fella. A teeny tiny little Buzz Bomber who looks completely blitzed out of his mind. Like, he's having a bad time. Buzz Bomber, original 1990s Sonic the Hedgehog figure, Bad Nick, Toy Sega, Tell Me Robot.
How big is it?
Hold on. It is just above 3 inches. Wait, not 3 inches. Hold on. I'll just send this. It's just above 2 inches. It's just below 2 inches, I think. I was looking at the meters.
I'll say 15.
15? Okay.
$9.99.
It is $36.
Bullshit.
God.
Oh, not a good round for either of you, but that's all I have today. thank you so much for joining us, Danny. It has been so awesome talking about this series. Please tell the good folks where they can find you and your work and when the volume of Scrap Nick is coming out and all the details.
Yeah, you can follow me mostly on Twitter at Danny8Bit. I'm also on Blue Sky. I don't remember the entire address for Blue Sky, so if you just look up Daniel Barnes or Danny 8-Bit, I'm on Blue Sky. My website is dannybarnes.net, and the collected trade of Scrap Nick Island comes out August 29th, which is hopefully when you're hearing this right now, and also the very next day Sonic's 900th Adventure comes out, and I also wrote a story for that. So yeah, I've got to get a double Sonic release at the end of August.
Man, hell 900.
Yeah. Danny's week. yeah, and Chris, where can they find you?
C_Dobbins on Twitter, or I guess now known as X. I don't know. It's probably not going to be known as X by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah.
But
it's Twitter. I'm not changing.
Yeah, no, I'm not changing shit either. He changed the app on my iPad. I ain't changing shit. Twitter is the only thing I will dead name. C_Dobbins on Twitter, C Dobbins Art on Instagram, cdobbinsart.com. Commissions are open, still looking for work. Don't know if I will be by the time this episode comes out, but I probably will be, knowing the state of the industry. Yeah.
Hell yeah. And you can find me at Sean@YourSon on Twitter and Blue Sky. I'm not really on Twitter except for promoting work, including I'm doing scripts and production for Gene Goldstein's No XP series. And for the Jelly Box Studio he just started in general, go check out that series. I think I have two out now that I wrote, and more to come. And follow the podcast at Sonic Pod on Twitter. And we will post these drop-in rings, these lovely, lovely figures, these collector's items on the thread for the episode. And once again, go buy Scrapbook Island Collected trade paperback. I know I'm getting it. And thank you again for joining us.
And make sure if you're listening, go buy Shuckles the Enchilada on eBay. go buy that little guy. Go buy that friend.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the ones that that people sweep up if we don't buy it before the episode goes live.
He'll be flying off store shelves. It'll be harder to find than Jack Specific's Infinite.
Now that does it, but Danny, do you remember our sign off? It's the Tails line read.
All did it together.
We'll do it on three. One, two, three.
We all did it together.
Oh my god, thank you so much. Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
See ya.